wonderful in training for her three-peat challenge, Linda Cloak.
Absolutely exhausted. I ran up the stairs and I'm exhausted. What am I going to do?
What were you doing, a bit of in-show training?
Well, you have to come up the stairs two at a time, because apparently when you climb Scarfield, there's really big steps.
Right.
And they're not sure I'm actually going to be able to do it in one step. I don't know how I'm going to...
You've only got little legs, haven't you?
I'm not going to have to climb up it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to step it.
Right.
So I'm coming up the stairs two steps at a time.
Right.
To practice, you see.
Okay. Good. And how did it go? Climb mountains,
though, didn't you? Sorry, I've never climbed a mountain before in my life. Right. I've been pulled up at the side of one on a ski lift thing. Or gone on a ski chair, but that's the closest I've come to it. So it's all going to be a new experience for me, and it's going to be in the dark. So right. I've got one of those little headlight things, you know.
All right, like a miner's lamp.
Yeah, that you buy for the children for Christmas. I've bought myself one of those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so at least I can see where
Why
I'm
Why are they doing it in the dark?
Because you've got to do the challenge in 24
hours. Oh, because you've got to fill it all in into the 24 hours, obviously. Sorry, silly me.
So yeah. I don't know which of the mountains we're climbing in the dark and which ones are in daylight.
Oh, so you don't know which one you're doing first?
We're doing Ben Nevis first.
Right, okay.
Will that be... I don't know. I need to ask.
Yeah, you start in Scotland, come down to the Lake District, and then end up at Snowdonia.
So, will Ben Nevis be in the dark?
Yeah.
Oh, there you
are. It all depends what time they start, really, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
If they start at midnight... say you finish at midnight the next day, it will be in the dark. If they start at 8 in the morning, it'll be in the light, won't it?
Yes, I have no idea. I've got to find out all the information. To be honest, I'm still scared about just doing it. So
I'll tell you what, I'm full of admiration for you. It's brilliant. Yeah, I shall be thinking of you.
Thank you.
While I'm laying on the sofa eating grapes. Cakes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting at the same time. It's all for a good cause, isn't it? I mean, you know, yeah. I think Penny's coming up with us to watch us.
Oh, is she?
I think
cool.
So.
Right. City Fibre is making strides in a £40 million project to roll out faster internet. The investment in Medway will see full fibre broadband across the towns, with works already well underway in Rochester, Chatham, Gillingham and Raynham, and sights set on further rollout in Strood and part of Hoo. So there you go. I keep seeing things like this and doing some of the villages. Nobody ever does anything round me, though. I ring them all up and go, oh, when are you doing Tenterton? They go, nah, sorry, mate. I got my broadband's up on a telegraph pole. It's terrible.
Well, of course, Elle's just moved into her new flat. Right. And
where's that?
It's in near the Blue Lake. So what's it called? St. James? No. St. Andrew's Lake. That's it. Yeah, Cuxton. Hauling.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
So, but she's got no internet. So she is really distressed, as you can imagine. 25, no internet, the world has fallen apart. So, and they're not putting it in until the 6th of March.
That's my birthday. Oh, blimey. I'll tell you what to do in the meantime is get a 4G dongle.
4G dongle, oh, okay.
Yeah. They work better than most broadband anyway these days.
Yeah. I've got the same. Have you? We're in the middle of the sticks and there's just nothing. Like the internet just doesn't, it doesn't quite get to our house. So a 4G receiver pointed right at the mast on the other side of the field. And that's faster, better than the cable, the copper.
Yeah, even if you've got fairly poor 4G reception, you can buy an aerial to stick on your chimney to improve it.
Well, they're in flats, so...
I've still got a roof.
Yeah, so I think the 4G dongle's a really good idea. So
I'll they're not expensive either.
And they'd be handy for us to have anyway.
So. Yeah, a really good backup.
Yeah, it depends on what type you buy, you know, because you can buy a full router or you can buy a small dongle, but either one is transportable, so you can take it with you. If you go away somewhere, you can just take it with you.
That's a really good idea. I'm going to invest in one of those. So, Marsh Network face-to-face networking, East Sussex, Kent. Marsh Network, East Sussex and Kent, 7th of March 2023, Pet Village Hall. The group is designed to enable businesses, social enterprises, charities and community groups in East Sussex and Kent to meet through regular face-to-face networking and other events. All are welcome with no restrictions on attendance, and booking in advance is essential at £8.50, part of which goes to the charity. Group members will make new contacts, develop collaboration and business relationships, seek and receive support from others and grow their business or organisation.
Fantastic.
I wing you through these, you know. I've got one left.
I've got loads.
Have you?
Yeah. But we're going to talk to Adam anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I'll tell you what, should we talk to Adam now?
Yeah, that sounds good.
That'll be good, won't it? And then, while we're talking to Adam, I can give you a couple more of these so that you've got some things to read.
Thank you.
Let's start with Adam from Swift Accountancy. Adam, welcome to the Business Bunker Show. It's a pleasure to see you. Thank you for joining us. We like an accountant on the show. We get a bit of free advice here, and look at what we do. As I was saying earlier, as a business person myself, I have a lot of store by accountancy services, and a few years ago on this very show, I just made a comment that I was going to see my accountant on a Friday, and loads of people twented me in and went, oh dear, oh, I hope it's all right. Sorry, what? Oh, it must be like a visit to the headmaster. Sorry. No, I use my accountants as advisors, as mentors, as support people, yeah? I ask them questions. You know, it isn't just about them telling me off or giving them receipts in a shoebox. It's, you know, how do I do this? How do I do that? And, you know, am I doing VAT in the right way? You know, there's all kinds of things that your accountant can help you with. So why don't we kick off by you kind of talking about some of those things, Adam? You know, the traditional role of an accountant, because people get confused about this as well, about, you know, audited accounts and, you know, confirmation statements and all that kind of bazooma that goes around the regulations. Yeah. Just give us an overview of the traditional role of an accountant, and then the additional things you do.
So the traditional role of an accountant is generally preparing your accounts, getting them submitted to Companies House, making sure you're all compliant and keeping up with all the rules and stuff.
Yeah.
An accountant can and should do so much more for your business in helping you to make sure you've got the right structure set up, you're set up in the right way in terms of that legal form, what's the right way for you, and that's a different answer for everyone, depending on who you are and how you're trading. Helping you get your software, your systems, because your systems are what your business really is. It's not you, it's not your products, it's the systems that make sure that all these different parts are running together and that they're working the way that they're supposed to. And then looking ahead for where your business wants to get to. Like, everyone started a business with a goal, with something in mind. Your accountant is the trusted advisor who helps you get to that point.
Right. Okay. Now, I'm also a great believer. I mean, there are lots of tools about now, you know, things like Xero and you know, all the digital tools. And, of course, the government have been whittering about making tax digital for ages. And they keep, like a lot of things that the government come up with, they keep having to put it off because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or they're not ready for it, or whatever their excuse is this week. But we all of us are using more and more digital tools in our business. Yeah. But one of the things that I find a lot of small businesses don't really do is have regular management accounts.
Yeah. And it's those management accounts that help you to make decisions as you're going through the year. So traditionally, in dealing with your accountosaurus, the one that you will see once a year, and that's it, your traditional accountant, they're giving you information that's potentially up to 21 months out of date. If your accounting period's 12 months long, and then you're doing your accounts right at the last minute, so 9 months after that date, that information is pointless. It doesn't add anything to what you're doing. Your business could have evolved massively since that point. So getting those accounts done quarterly, monthly,
absolutely. And you're absolutely right. By the time you've presented the end of year accounts, and they've gone, oh, I made a profit that I didn't expect to make, and I've now got to pay corporation tax on it. Whereas if they were more aware, they may have planned their spending in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
You know, having realised they were making profits, they may have invested in something else that would minimise that corporation tax position by investing in the business.
Or particularly for startups, the most painful to see is when someone doesn't realise that they've gone over the VAT threshold and then, bam, they've got hit, they've got to re-invoice their people if they can. If not, they have to take the hit and, you know, to lose potentially 20% of your sales overnight just because you didn't do your accounts on a more timely basis.
Yeah,
it can be agonising.
You see, you dragged me into a rant again, haven't you? You dragged me into a rant again. I was talking to some people about this the other day. This VAT threshold thing at 85,000 is a cliff edge.
Yeah,
it's a real cliff edge. If you look at the numbers, there are literally hundreds of thousands of small businesses that refuse to grow.
Yeah,
yeah. they'll get up to 80 grand and then they'll go on holiday rather than make any more money and get into that VAT threshold.
So
productivity in the economy has been hit by that because it's an artificial barrier to a lot of companies growing. They just don't want to get involved in it.
It's such an arbitrary amount as well. Like if it was far lower, let's say, I think on the continent, they have lower thresholds for VAT or the equivalent, and then everyone's playing and it doesn't make that much of a big deal. But you've got this kind of in the middle cutoff between a micro business and a small business. And, yeah, it distorts the playing field for businesses to participate and play the game.
I own a small business in France. The VAT threshold for everyone is 20 grand. But if you have the equivalent of a limited company, you have to register for VAT immediately, even if you've got zero revenue. I can't make up my mind which is the best way of doing it. Because the problem is it's unfair on all kinds of businesses, because those businesses that are VAT registered are immediately 20% more expensive than their competitors. Now, although you can claim the VAT back because it's an input tax, for your end client, it makes you more expensive.
Yeah, particularly if you're transactional, you're doing business to customer, then you either kind of stay very small, don't grow, or you kind of go over and you kind of take the hit. But you have to then ramp up your growth massively to offset that. So
we've just turned that corner.
Yeah.
Just gone VAT registered, literally. Have you? Yeah. And it's impacted on a lot of our clients.
Yeah. I mean, there are pros and cons for it, if you're the kind of business that buys a lot of stuff, then it actually pays you to be VAT registered because you can claim a lot of things back.
Yeah.
But the single biggest issue is it puts your prices up to an end consumer that's not a business by 20%. If you're doing B2B, it's not a problem because most other businesses are VAT registered as well. But if you're supplying to the retail market or B2C, you're 20% dearer than other people.
Actually, thinking about it, that's a point. So we're doing these events and we're charging £20, which goes to Just Giving. Presumably, we haven't got to charge VAT on that, although we're running it through.
If it's a donation to Just Giving, then it's a charitable donation.
Right, so we haven't got to.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And you can do gift aid on it, but we ain't even going to go there.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, so Adam, coming back to this, you're absolutely right. Of course, an awful lot of people that employ accountants only talk to them once a year at the end of the year.
Yeah.
To do their end of year, just go over this. There's a confirmation statement. So just tell us what the confirmation statement is about.
The confirmation statement's an annual thing into Companies House to say who's the directors, who's the shareholders, or the persons of significant control, who's got a say in how the entity's run, what it does, what its trade is, that kind of thing,
right?
Essentially.
Okay. And that's people that influence the business?
Yeah, people who kind of have a shareholding or have kind of control over it through shareholdings that maybe someone else has, but who's got to say?
My understanding is as well, though, it's even senior management people, even if they don't have a shareholding that could have some kind of influence, you have to list.
Potentially, if they have significant influence or control over the way where the business is run,
Yeah, weird. Just more regulation for the sake of it, really. Okay, but that has to be done every year, and of course there's a fee attached to that as well.
Yeah, it's about £13. Yeah. So it's not much, but it's the principle of it.
Yeah.
So it's annually unless something else happens where there's a new change in person of significant control, but generally speaking, once a year you have to make one.
Yeah, but it's a nice little money earner for the government because there's 5.8 million businesses and they've all got to stump up 13 quid, which is pretty good, isn't it, for doing nothing.
Money for nothing.
Interesting. So as an accountant, nobody's listening, so you can say this. As an accountant, do you find it frustrating when customers only deal with you once a year? Do you find it frustrating where you think, I could help you by getting this sorted out, but you don't seem to want to?
Like we said, I've got one client at the minute, and he's in that same thing where if we'd have had a conversation 10 to 12 months ago, we could have seen, hang on, you're going over this VAT threshold, we've got to act now. But doing something, it's like shutting the stable door after the horse's Voltage.
Yeah.
It's that one. And, you know, if you can get out in front of your problems, you've got a much better chance of solving them.
I don't remember the actual regulations, but if you do go over the threshold, you actually have to go back and charge VAT, don't you, over a period of time?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Is it to the start of your financial year, or is it...
To 30 days after you went over. So let's say you went over in June by the 1st of August, 30 days afterwards, you've got to be registered. So if that happens to be 2 years kind of down the line that you've realised, that's a huge clobbering. You're going to have to find from somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. It could be interesting sending people bills, couldn't it? Going, you bought something off me 2 years ago. You owe me 20%. Yeah.
So if you do cash flow forecasts for a business, say, I mean, would you advise doing? People often advise doing like a 5-year plan. Would you advise doing a 3 or 5 year, or do you think a year's enough?
Depending on the size of business, the complexity, potentially a year's enough. I've got a charity that I work with, and we do it every 3 months or so just to see where things are going. But yeah, we'll look to do kind of longer term plans depending on how things look. But yeah, the more you've kind of got this line between where you're kind of basing it on contracts that you've got. If your contracts are long term, then that's fine, but you can also end up being a bit of a mystic meg, and you've got to have something to be able to base it on and not just fortune telling.
I love
doing them. When I was in business with my husband, so we ran a fencing business, and we decided we were going to start manufacturing concrete fence posts.
That kind of fence. Wondered if you were playing with swords or something.
No.
Okay.
So it all looked great, and I remember getting really excited doing the cash flow forecast. So we were, you know, and but the thing is, what we didn't take into account was that we didn't get the building that we wanted, so we had to cure all of the concrete outside. And, of course, we ended up with a really frosty year, and we ended up having to throw away loads of the posts. Mm. So it completely threw that cash flow out of the window, and we had to, you know, totally relook at everything and say, well, how are we going to sort this out?
Mm. Yeah.
And in the end, we had to increase the price of our posts, whereas we were pretty competitive, you know, before.
Right.
But that's what we had to do.
But yeah, having those conversations, looking at that as soon as kind of you're aware that something's changed.
Mm.
And in your case, it was having to increase the price. The cost of materials has gone up. Then.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I've got a number of businesses, and I use different systems because I'm like that.
Yeah.
my major business, I use Sage. In my other businesses, I use Xero. But on all of them, I have monthly P&L and balance sheet reports. Yep. And it's not difficult, but I guess a lot of small businesses don't actually do bookkeeping either, do they?
No. And the thing is, if you're doing those monthly and quarterly accounts, first off, you know kind of what you're doing. If you've got your accountant in and part of that, they can even look at, well, for this month, your corporation tax, it would be, let's say, £1,000. So you know then, I'd stick that off into a saver so it's ready and put aside so there's no concerns down the line when it comes out.
Yeah.
So if a company, sorry, Paul, if a company wanted you to do monthly management accounts with them, then presumably if they've never looked at accounts before, you help them understand what they all mean.
Yeah. So one of the things I do is I will kind of have meetings with people or do video overviews, because it's all well and good, like, shoving a PDF over to them and saying, this is what it is. But if you don't know, you don't know. And accountants have traditionally done a really good job of just assuming everyone knows.
Yeah.
So I'll do a video. I'll go through and highlight on the screen, this is your sales. This is kind of your costs. This has increased. This hasn't. What's gone on here?
Yeah.
Or your cost of materials has increased. And,
It's interesting because a profit and loss is reasonably straightforward. You know, if you presented someone with a profit and loss, if they had, you know, a bit of a brain cell, they can go, well, that's my revenues, that's my outgoings, that's what I see. I think where a lot of people start to get confused is with balance sheets. Can you give us an overview of just what a balance sheet shows?
So your balance sheet summarizes what the company owns, or business, what it owns, what it owes to other people, being its creditors, and what it is owed, its debtors, or its kind of balance in the bank or stock.
Or its assets,
Yeah. And so it's the interaction of all of those, which essentially comes from everything that's happened in the profit and loss account. But it's a snapshot at one point in time, your year end, let's say 31st of December, what's the company look like? What's its financial position? Is it healthy? Has it got lots of cash in the bank, lots of assets? Or has it got more creditors than it's got debtors? Has it potentially insolvent or kind of relying on other funding?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting when you talk about cash in the bank. I'm terrible. Whenever I deal with anybody for the first time, I go straight to company's house and Endo or company check, and I pull their data.
It's due diligence. It's good business to have a look.
Yeah. But a lot of them, smaller businesses, don't report the cash in at bank. Yeah. No. And the ones that do are great because you go, right, well, they're worth some money because they got some money in the bank. But the ones that don't, you just got no idea, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose the biggest thing is that if that balance sheet is kind of positive, if it's kind of, there's no brackets other than on the creditors, that's kind of what you want to look at to see that it's healthy. Current assets, kind of, which on smaller sets of accounts has got the debtors, the WIP or stock that's on hand and the bank. As long as that's like looking healthy and you're seeing positive numbers, that's really what you're looking for.
I'm smiling. I won't say who it was because I won't. But a few years ago, there was a company that won a massive award in Kent for the fastest growing business or whatever. Yeah. And there were loads of things going, this is a multi-million pound business. So I just looked at their accounts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? You've got like 126 quid in the bank. Yeah. You've got assets of 400 quid. There was nothing to show that it was a growing business of that size.
Yeah, which is either two things. It could be the owners have kind of stripped all the cash out, and so they're not building a long-term sustainable business. They're building a lifestyle business that just kind of funds their cars or whatever it is.
Yeah, their holiday home in Barbados.
Or... what goes out on social media, and I see this a lot, doesn't tie up with what the actual economic reality is.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. They aspire to be a multi-million pound business at some point in the future. Yeah,
as
yeah.
my grandson said, I want to be a millionaire nanny.
Really? Was his name Trotter?
No, it wasn't. That's what he said.
This time next year, Grandma, we're going to be billionaires. Cool. You know, I have so many people, especially on social media, don't understand the role of a lot of these things. I find myself having more and more bizarre conversations with people. And some guy the other day was trying to tell me that accountants wouldn't be necessary if it wasn't for tax evasion. Really? Really? You really believe that? You know, it's just kind of bonkers.
How do you help them grow their business? How would you help a business grow? Because I know that's one of the things that you do, which is...
I would say mindset is the biggest thing that prevents businesses from growth. So not knowing kind of how their business works, not having the abundance mindset that you need to see that there is business out there. People do want to spend despite the cost of living crisis. People make time and money and effort for the things that are really important to them. And as a business, you have to be as strong as possible at kind of convincing people that what you're doing is valuable and worthwhile. And that's the thing with accountants. A lot of them previously haven't done a good job of saying, like, we are the ones that should be your trusted advisor. We're the ones that can help you, because they would potentially shy away or not kind of be proactive and offer the advice and the support to help people fulfill their goals, which is ultimately why they started a business in the first place.
Mm. Absolutely. And of course, you know, you're helping businesses cope with a massive amount of red tape, regulations and things that can go wrong. You know, people don't always realise that, one, they're missing opportunities, or two, they're potentially causing themselves a problem in the way that they're doing things.
And potentially it's because there's a little bit of misinformation or mis-selling when it comes to like software. You mentioned Xero, Sage, QuickBooks. The adverts will have them have you believe that you don't need accountants, the software does it all, but it devalues what the accountant does, because all that is just kind of show it. You've then got to interpret, well, what does it mean for you right here, right now?
Yeah.
And that's only what the numbers are.
Yeah.
It's then like, what does it mean? How does that interact with the tax legislation and your overall kind of plans and goals and all that?
Yeah.
And
Absolutely, and none of those systems tell you what you should do. They just are posting tools, basically, and ways of organising the data. But they haven't said whether what you've posted is the correct thing and the correct place to post it and the correct way to treat it. And, of course, especially when we're talking about taxation, we have one of the most complex taxation systems in the world. You know, there's over 12,000 pages of the tax code, and it's frightening, you know, and it changes so regularly. You know, a few years ago, I had a business that was on flat rate VAT.
Yeah.
And when they changed it, for a while, HMRC said, no, you don't, you know, you can keep doing it. Until one day, they suddenly came on and went, you haven't paid your VAT properly. Like, really? And we're on flat rate VAT. No, we've scrapped that. Yes, I know, but you told us that we could keep doing it. Oh, yeah, well, you can't anymore. Really? Yeah. Well, thanks for telling us. Yeah. You know, regulations change and things change. And we were talking earlier about some products are VAT exempt. Some are just bonkers, like our Jaffa Cakes business, you know, biscuits or cakes. Yeah, because depending on which way you view that is whether you charge VAT on them or not. You know, there's just, and those rules change on a regular basis.
So, yeah. Some of our commercial invoices are reverse VAT.
Oh, yeah, in the construction business, you have reverse VAT, which is a real giggle.
Not least because the construction industry has been hampered with so many things. So construction industry scheme tax, where you're stopping the amount like on your subcontractors. If they haven't registered, then you're stopping 30% or 20%. If HMRC deemed them kind of on good enough behaviour, then they can get gross payment status, but they've then got to jump through a load of hoops. Mm. And construction is already lumbered with so much red tape from health and safety, which has its place and everything else. But the last thing they needed to do was then make it even more complex to comply.
Mm. Absolutely.
We deal with reverse VAT, like you say, gross payments, and obviously then the CIS for sole traders and stuff.
And it gets worse if you export, because depending on where you export, it's like the European Union suddenly introduced the rule, and this made me laugh. Well, you have to charge VAT in the customer's country. Not where you sold it from, but who you sold it to. I went to an HMRC webinar, and I said, well, one of the products I sell is software, and it's downloadable, right? If I'm a Belgian on a train going across the channel to my home in France before I visit my business in Switzerland, what's the VAT? What VAT do I... I mean, there's a website, VAT Moss, where you can supposedly work all this out. But when you think about it, it's bonkers, and it completely overturns the point of an input tax like VAT in the first place, which was supposed to be uniform, but it isn't. Just mad. Say you need an accountant. Now, my question to you as an accountant is, how on earth do you keep up with all of this?
So I'm a chartered certified accountant, so I have to do CPD, continuous professional development. So I have to spend a minimum of 20 hours a year kind of in course, on courses, like keeping up to date with the knowledge, with everything that's changing, because the tax law changes, accounting standards, they all change, and it's for us to make sure that we can give the best and the most correct. Sounds kind of wrong because it's not correct, it's not, it's black and white, but the best possible advice to people.
And it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, I won't tell you what, but I'm talking to my accountants at the moment about something that I want to do, and they weren't sure, so they've asked HMRC for direction.
Yeah.
And the kind of thing you get back from HMRC is, well, maybe.
Go and have a look at the tax code, and we'll tell you if you got it wrong.
Let's say, try it, and we'll fine you if it's wrong. But we're asking you first. We're not sure. You'd have to set a precedent with this. Well, what do you think? Give it a go. Really?
It's a minefield, isn't it?
It is.
Changing.
I just want to quickly focus, Adam, on you as a business yourself. What's your? You're obviously an accountant, but what was your background before starting your own accountancy practice?
So I worked for a few firms. I'm not originally from Kent. I started off in the West Midlands, Cannock, working for my dad, in fact. Started with his accountancy firm. I then moved on to a few others where I got my chartered status, and then moved down to Kent about 7 years ago, and then did some more work locally before setting up on my own in October 20.
Okay, fine. What inspired you to set up your own business?
Especially in lockdown.
Yeah. Entirely the wrong time, Adam.
Well, what I had seen is that businesses didn't get the advice that they needed the support that they deserved. Like, I took on one client, and his accountant had completely ghosted him over the lockdown. So
right.
Then it came to him trying to claim the self-employed grants, and he claimed he wasn't eligible because his accountant hadn't told him.
Hmm.
So then we had to reclaim those, but he was eligible for the bounce back loans, which right. ended up being a lot better for him.
Right.
But he hadn't been told that. No one had given him any advice. And so helping businesses to do the best that they possibly can.
Yeah.
Is,
I mean, that was a giggle as well, wasn't it? If you're in business, the whole lockdown, bounce back loan, furlough schemes and everything, everybody working blind, the government got robbed solid by people, pulling the wall with
it
things
still
like
is,
that.
Yeah.
And there was even, I seem to remember, I have a finance manager in my mate business, and she does all the stuff like that and just sends me the profits. I wish. There was some debate going on about where you even post the furlough money and how you show it in the books and how you record it as income. Because it was, you hadn't earned it anywhere. The government just sent it to you.
And the precedent, the basis of what has gone before, is just being made up as you go along.
Yeah.
So there was quite a few webinars being done a few days after something has been announced, and you haven't really had time to digest, to understand, to process what the legislation meant.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, they're not very forgiving. If you get it wrong, they'll fine you. Yeah, even though they can't even tell you what it is themselves. Yeah.
No, there's the old thing about that they would charge you interest at whatever it is, 3-4% on late payments.
Yeah.
But you'll only earn interest if you have overpaid at 0.5% or something a lot lower.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Don't you love them? And that's why we need professional help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Adam, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for that.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a shout out for your website so that people can find out where you are and who you are if they want to talk to you more.
Yep, we are at www.swiftaccountancy.co.uk. You can find out a bit more about what we do, why we started, the services we can provide, and also case studies of other businesses that we've supported and helped them through challenges that are potentially not unlike the ones you're facing in yours.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you for that. And I just urge anybody in business, with a small business, do talk to your accountants. Do use their knowledge and their abilities. It is worthwhile. It will cost you money because it's not a charity, but 99.9% of accountants will actually save you money.
Yeah.
Their fees will be offset by your savings.
Yeah.
And your growth.
Yeah. Good advice is kind of worth paying for, and a good accountant is cost neutral. Right? They'll save you more than they cost you.
Absolutely.
And I've got case studies full of them of people who have had that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Adam, thank you so much for that.
Thanks,
we've got about 20 minutes left of the show. I've given you a couple of things that you can read.
Yeah.
I've just had a follow-up email. I mentioned just before we talked to Adam, Martin Reeves of Collectors Buddy, Buddy Collectors on the Twitter now, and he's tweeted, "Thank you for my Business Bunker shout-out. The tweets you kindly mentioned are actually missed opportunities that I've highlighted to fundraise for charities to then attract funding. My own fundraising is done on a smaller basis. However, it will be increased soon." Yeah, so absolutely. If you can, give Martin a follow on the Twitter. His Twitter handle is Buddy Collectors. Give him a follow. You can find out what he's up to and what he's about. And then if anybody wants to help him there, please do, because what he's doing is fantastic. And Martin said again, "When I started Collectors Buddy as a .com in 2004, my accountant gave me vital business advice, what to do, and a reality check, to be fair."
Yeah.
So absolutely, again, we didn't actually talk about this, Adam, but one of the things that I used to operate as an angel investor, investing in startup businesses.
Yeah.
And one of the things I came across is a lot of people don't know what kind of business to start. you know, technically a self-employed, limited company, limited by guarantee or LLP partnership, or nowadays a CIC or, you know, community interest company or a charity. Yeah. There are different vehicles for starting up a business. And yeah. So many people pick the wrong one. I have one company, again, I won't tell you the name. They wanted me to invest in the business and it looked like a reasonable business. And they wanted to sell me some shares. And because I know my way around that, I said, well, I'll buy 26% of the shares because 26% gives me a say as a small business shareholder. Yeah. They went, oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, fine. And when I looked, they didn't have any shares.
Oh, no.
They were a company limited by guarantee to £1. They didn't actually have any shares to sell. And when I pointed that out, the two people that ran it went, really? I went, yeah. And they said, well, we put £1 in each. Yeah, you did, but that's the total amount that you've got there because you're limited by guarantee. Did you mean to do that? Don't know. Didn't know the difference. Didn't know there was a difference. Yeah, there is. Which, again, is something that, you know, before you do anything, you need to speak to someone that knows what they're doing to know what the best way of doing these things are.
Yeah. So one plug, actually, if I may, I'm going to be running a startup course. If you follow on social media, you'll be seeing about that later on in the next couple of months. But in about April or maybe May, that kind of window, we'll be doing 4 sessions on essentially why are you starting up your business, what's your vision, helping you to kind of get that right, your marketing, your people, your overall strategy, and of course talking about your accounts. And you know, these 4 sessions, they've helped previous people that I've worked with to help them get the fundamentals, those basics in place, so that they've got everything behind them, so essentially the deck is stacked, so that they're not going to be one of the 10, the 20% of businesses who kind of who make it, rather than the majority that don't in the first few years.
Cool.
That's really good.
I've had a tweet. I'm not laughing, Sarah. Honestly, I'm really not. I've had a tweet from Sarah Marsh Collins. I'm really sorry I'm missing the Business Bunker show. I've locked my keys in the car and the driver door handle isn't working, even though it's unlocked. See, this is all these key entry system nonsense, isn't it? Passenger door's locked, the spare key's in Devon, and the car's in Kent. And the buttons don't work on the spare key. Car drama. We'll get to you on the catch-up service. The only other thing I can suggest, I don't know, you obviously haven't got this, but on my car, I have an app, and I can lock and unlock my car from my phone. Make sure you haven't got an app for it, Sarah. Because if you have, you can unlock the car that way. But it's funny, I was reading a thing from Kent Police the other day about keyless entry systems and about the fact how easy it is to spoof a key, a Bluetooth key.
Yeah.
You know, because you do get these funny things that happen, don't you? You've got a key in your pocket and it suddenly unlocks your door as you walk towards it, even if you didn't mean to unlock the door. One car I had had that kind of system, and I'd literally just got it. I'd only had it a few days, and I'm a bit OCD. When I lock my car, I always test the door handle because the key was in my pocket. Every time I tested the door handle, it unlocked it, and I'm thinking, I've locked this already once. I lock it again, test the door handle, and it unlocked. And it took me ages to realise I was unlocking it myself because I was stood next to it. It was just, you know, yeah. So I hope you get that sorted out soon, Sarah. I'm sorry to hear that. Talking of cars, DG East have been on. Hi, Paul and Linda. How about a shout out for a frustrated vehicle supplier still waiting for vehicles from last year? That's the lovely folks at DG East. Tell me about it. My car was 5 months late being delivered. Frightening.
It is, but that is the way things are going at the moment, isn't
it? It is, yeah. A shortage of semiconductors.
Yeah.
Right, what have you got, Linda?
Okay, I have Medway Business Grants. So I thought this was really appropriate with what Adam's just been talking about. So Partners for Growth is a Medway Council scheme. It provides grants for small to medium enterprise businesses in Medway that are looking to take their growth to the next stage. The scheme is available to Medway residents who are thinking of setting up a business, looking to further grow their businesses, looking to make their business more environmentally sustainable. To find out more, go to www.medway.gov.uk/PFG grant. I'd like to ask you, Paul, Medway give away a lot of grants. Mm. So a friend of mine got a £9,000 grant. She's a hairdresser.
Yep.
That was available in Medway, but because we were in Maidstone, we weren't eligible.
Yep.
Is that just because Medway are good at grants and Maidstone are rubbish?
It all depends. It all depends. Medway are a unitary authority, so they're like a county council. So their competitors, if you want, are Kent County Council. And as councils, they bid for government funds to do these kind of things. Sometimes they both get it. Sometimes only one of them gets it. Sometimes they don't get very much. Sometimes they get a lot of money. If you are in Medway, then your grant funding, should it be available, will come from Medway Council. If you're anywhere else in Kent, then it will come from Kent County Council. Kent County Council do have quite a few funds available. You have to look on their website to see what they are and how eligible you are.
Whenever we've contacted them, they have always finished.
you get this quite a lot. I mean, at the moment, if you go to Gravesham Council website or Twitter handle, if you go to their Twitter handle, Gravesham Business, I think it is, or Business in Gravesham, they've been tweeting a lot of support packages for different things. So one of the things I saw yesterday was £2,500 grants available for people in arts and creative businesses.
But that's in Gravesham.
No, there was a KCC grant that was available across the county, but Gravesham Council tweeted it. so you can. There are localised ones. I've got one right here. Folkestone and Hythe District Council have introduced a green business grant scheme. To help smaller businesses become more energy efficient. Grants of up to £10,000 may be available to your business, and under special exceptional circumstances, £25,000. The scheme will currently run until the 31st of March. To find out more, go to folkestone.works/green-business-grant-scheme. So that's Folkestone and Hythe District Council that have a particular scheme for eco-friendly stuff. You've basically got us. We read out as many as we can on this show, but we can only do the ones that they've sent us or that we've found. Yeah, there are so many about that. It really, my advice to anybody is do a thorough search of the internet and government websites, both government, Kent County Council. There's also a mob called the Southeast Enterprise Committee. They tend to be the arbiter of all the funds that go to other councils and other organisations. You can go there. There's also the Kent Invicta Chamber run a hub, a support hub, where they list. It's a signposting hub. I would recommend, if you're in Medway, look at Medway Council. If you're anywhere else in Kent, look at Kent County Council. Look at your local borough council websites and just see what grant funding they've got available for different things. But you've got to search for it, basically.
Yeah, you've got to spend the time, I suppose, like with anything, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so Age UK Medway are pleased to share the local community that they will be shortly be entering into a long lease for a significant building in Royal Pier Road, Gravesend, Kent, known locally as Clarendon Royal Hotel, to expand its service provision and offer a broad range of services and care to help reach a larger and more diverse community to achieve life's fullness. Over the coming months, the hotel will undergo a gradual change from its traditional use to become a thriving community hub, incorporating extra care housing for over 55s with an existing or anticipated care need, valuable respite bed spaces, which will be used to help ease bed blocking pressures in local hospitals, and a thriving hub of activities on the ground floor for resident and non-resident local communities. Age UK Medway intend to celebrate and preserve the valuable position that the Clarendon Hotel has held in the local community for over 100 years, and further enhance this through their scheme, honouring the legacy of Clarendon Building and securing it as the heart of the local community in a new and effective way. That's fantastic, using an old hotel to enhance the community.
I'm really pleased with that. I'm a trustee of Age UK Medway. It's a fantastic project, and it's going to be a real, real benefit to the community in all kind of ways, and we're really excited about it. I think I've read all the tweets. If I haven't read your tweet out, please retweet it so that I can see. Use the hashtag BBunker so I can find it. But we have had a huge number of tweets, and I've tried to read as many as I can. Coming up is the spring meeting of the Rye Chamber of Commerce. taking place on the 15th of March from 6pm to 10pm, which is interesting. It's an evening meeting, obviously, at the Brewery Yard Club in Langate in Rye. Join us for the first of our quarterly chamber meetings, followed by a delicious Māori spice curry supper and relaxed networking with your peers. Can't be bad.
No, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kent FE Colleges invite businesses to invest in net zero as ambitious new skills centres prepare to open countrywide next month. An ambitious skills accelerator programme will not only help businesses of all sizes recruit for future talent and retrain existing staff, but develop or test new products and services too. New learning zones equipped with the latest decarbonisation-linked technologies and complementing a suite of new training courses and qualifications will officially launch next month at FE College sites in Ashford, Canterbury, Hadlow and Maidstone. As well as providing career opportunities for future students, these new net zero focused facilities will provide a launchpad for businesses looking to test how automation, robotics and other sustainable technologies can support or benefit their businesses, as well as retraining existing staff. Focus industries include construction, horticulture and advanced manufacturing, with relevance to broader sectors from green energy solutions and food production to electric vehicle assembly lines. New courses from Hadlow College, North Kent College, Mid Kent College and EKC Group will be created in accordance with what local employers need, flexing over time as new technologies develop.
Fantastic. The Battle of Britain Memorial at Westmorling. Our spring Sunday talks continue on Sunday the 5th of March with a presentation from Adam Fraser and Catherine Tappenden of Arcadis. Adam and Catherine will deliver a presentation on the record-breaking world flight from Lyme to Cairo in June 1919 by a young Canadian RAF pilot called Harry Yates. Yates needed to deliver Harry St. John Philby, the father of convicted spy Kim Philby, to Egypt so that he could negotiate a peace between warring Arab tribes. Flying in a massive Handy Page 400, he left Lyme on the 21st of June and arrived in Cairo on the 26th. The location of this talk is at the Battle of Britain Memorial in Capel of Fern, Folkestone, on Sunday the 5th of March at 2:30. If you want a book, send an email to inquiries at battleofbritainmemorial.org.
Wow, amazing all these things going on, isn't it? Hello, my name is Rebecca, and I am a second-year paramedic student at Bournemouth University. I've been fascinated by paramedicine for as long as I can remember, and I am passionate about making a difference for those in need. I've been faced with a fantastic opportunity with a company called Work the World that provides international healthcare internships. This is to go to Ghana for a three-week-long international placement. During this, I will be working in a low-resource hospital in the emergency department. I will be faced with a whole range of different patients, which will broaden my knowledge both clinically and culturally. I am to raise $2,500 to fund the trip and the medical insurance that I need. To raise this, I will be completing different fundraising events throughout the year. My main fundraising event will be walking 20 miles along the coast. I will be completing this with my mum. I want to go to a developing country to learn how to provide medical treatment in a low-resource environment. It will help me in the future career to think more outside the box when faced with difficult situations. It will also allow me to understand different cultures and beliefs. This trip will push me out of my comfort zone and will allow me to become a better paramedic in the future. Thank you. Go to gofundme.com/paramedic-placement-to-Ghana. That's interesting. So, have you done anything, Mick, to step outside your comfort zone?
This radio show.
That's a good start. What about you, Adam?
I did a palace-to-palace cycle ride to raise money for the Prince's Trust, which helps young people start businesses, which was a few years ago. And I think that's it. I say that's it. It was 100 miles or 90 miles. So, yeah, it was
pretty
a full
much.
Day.
Were you aching afterwards?
A little bit, yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm definitely stepping outside my comfort zone with this climb mountains things. Or walk. It's not really climbing, is it? I mean, if I had to climb and get the strings and the ropes and the all the doodah that goes with it, I don't think I could do it. But
yeah.
I'd like the link for that, I think, with we'd be our sponsor.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Well, the money goes to Kenwood, and it's, you know, Kenwood Place. Have either of you been there?
I haven't, no.
No, yeah. I haven't.
So it's in a lovely part of the country. It's in Yalden. And I've got to say, it's such a lovely old Victorian building. And the sponsors for it, so we do social media sponsoring it. And one of the other sponsors is Claire, and she is Miss MPS. So she's a VA.
Yep.
You know Claire,
yeah.
Yes. And then the other one is the Health Hut. So I started this by going to a talk at the Health Hut. It's in Maidstone. And basically what Adele does there is she helps people lose weight one person at a time, or helps people become happy and healthy one person at a time. That's how she says it.
Yeah.
And what she's been doing is she's been arranging walks. So there was a walk at Folkestone at the weekend, which I didn't do because I was at the Broadstairs Blues Bash. Drinking wine and eating bad things. but anyway, apparently there was a trainer there and he was saying, go to the top of the mountain, walk down, go to the top of the mountain, walk down. So it was all really funny. We're just saying, what have you done to step outside your comfort zone? So I wonder if Paul's done anything to step outside of his comfort zone.
You what?
Have you done anything to step outside your comfort zone?
I've just been for a comfort break.
Oh, no, you
have. Making me drink coffee during the middle of a show wasn't good. Apart from that, have I stepped outside of my comfort zone?
Have you ever stepped outside of your comfort zone?
I don't think I've ever been in a comfort zone. yeah, many times.
I was speaking to someone the other day and they said that you need to disrupt your life to be able to move on in life. You've got to be, you've got to disrupt it, haven't you? So, I mean, social media really disrupted all of our lives, didn't it?
Yes, it has. I mean, for me personally, my life... My private life has been fairly bog standard. My business life has been one long, disruptive nightmare. anyway.
Excellent.
We've reached the end of the show.
We have, I know.
I want to say a massive thank you to Mick Surgison of All Floor Trade Centre, to Adam Clegg of Swift Accountancy, to my gorgeous co-host, the lovely Linda Cloak. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. See ya.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.